Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and today we're going to talk about the difference between successful dieters and unsuccessful dieters. Those people who seem to have their shit together and who seem to be successful with losing weight, and those people who are not successful with losing weight. What those differences are, because they're probably not what you think. I think oftentimes people think the successful dieters have something magical about them. There's some trait, characteristic, something that they do or that are about them that makes it easy for them. Like they make it seem easy. And for people who are struggling, when we look at that, we start putting characteristics towards them of why they can do it and I can't. And the thing is, the differences between people who are successful and not successful are not these magical little characteristics about people. It's about some very basic strategies, some mindset shifts that separate the two. So I want to talk about these one at a time. And then at the end, talk about the one thing I feel like is the most important one of all, and one that will make the biggest difference in my opinion. So let's start at the beginning. The number one thing out of the gate that's the difference between people who are successful and people who are not is planning. Planning ahead. Successful dieters plan ahead. They don't try to wing it from one meal to the next. They know that doesn't work. They know that catches up with you at the end of a day and will bite you in the butt more times than it won't. And planning ahead doesn't mean meal prep. It could, you know, a lot of people like to do the whole meal prep on Sunday to set themselves up for the week. And if you can do that, more power to you. That's amazing. But what I'm talking about is literally sitting down the night before and planning out your nutrition for the entire day. And when you plan out your nutrition, that means figuring out calories, protein grams, and serving sizes of your breakfast, your lunch, and your dinner. One thing I think that helps with this substantially is creating what I call a protein cheat sheet. And if you can, go grab a piece of paper and a pen right now, because I want you to create one as I am talking about this. You can transfer it into your computer or whatever you want, but if you just go grab something to write with and do it on a scratch sheet of paper, lay it all out just as I'm telling you, this will help you. Forever and ever and ever, this will be something that you use. It's worth doing. So make one column over on the left-hand side of this piece of paper. You're going to put on that column, list protein sources that you like. So for instance, for my sheet, I have chicken on there. I have shrimp on there. I have steak on there. I have hamburgers on there. I have ham. The whole meat category. I have a lot of meats on mine. I have Greek yogurt on there. I have cottage cheese on there. I have protein powder on there. And I have tuna. I have a bunch of things like that. My first column, I just name them. The protein sources that I like. The second column, what you're going to do is write down serving sizes for these protein sources. And you're going to list multiple serving sizes for each source. So like for Greek yogurt, you could put a half a cup and a cup, because sometimes you may want less than other times. So it's nice to have different options for serving sizes on this chart. It will make your life easier. For meat, you could have 4 ounces of chicken, 6 ounces of chicken, whatever, just multiple serving sizes for each protein source that you put on the piece of paper. The third column will be how many calories are in each one of those serving sizes. So this may take some time for you to look up on Google or get the information from your app, whatever you're using, but fill that in for all your different serving sizes. So now you know the calories for each of those serving sizes. The last column, you're going to do the amount of protein grams in all these serving sizes. And you may, again, have to look that up, use your app, whatever, but you're going to fill in all the protein grams for all the different serving sizes. So what you have in front of you will be your protein cheat sheet. And the reason this is so helpful is because this is how you plan your meals. You plan your meals around getting 30 to 40 grams of protein per meal. And this little cheat sheet that you've created is going to be so much easier for you to be able to do that because you've done all the math. You're going to build your meals around stuff on this sheet, right? You're going to add stuff to your meal, obviously, but the priority here is to get 30 to 40 grams of protein at every meal. And so you're going to use this sheet as your planning tool. It will make planning ahead so much easier for you over the long haul. So you've got your protein cheat sheet. You sit down tonight and you say, okay, this is what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow. You're going to put it into your app or into your spreadsheet, however you track it. You're going to sit down and figure out, okay, this is what I want to do for lunch. You're going to make your numbers work. You're going to create your meal, put it in the app or spreadsheet. And you're going to do the same thing with dinner. And then it's already going to be pre-logged for you. This is a difference maker. And it's going to hold you a little bit more accountable too. Once you've logged this in ahead of time, you're more likely to stick with it than if you're just trying to wing it from one meal to the next. And this is where people get into trouble, is when they are trying to wing it. You know, you probably come out of the gate pretty well with breakfast, cool. Lunch gets a little sketchy depending on what's going on, if you're at work or you're at home, trying to get lunch at a low calorie amount because we somehow think that the lower calorie our meals are, the better, but that's gonna cause problems for us later when we get really hungry. So we're just winging it, right? Then we come home from work and we're super tired. We're hungry, probably hangry at this point because we didn't plan enough calories in our lunch. So we're really hungry at this point. We get home, the kids need us, we're running them here and there. And now being tired, being hangry, we have to figure out, okay, I've got to make dinner that's going to meet my nutrition guidelines, which are X, Y, and Z. What am I going to do? You're looking in the fridge. You're looking in the cabinet. You're trying to, in your head, put all this stuff together, and you are so tired. This is the last thing you want to do. And so what do? You end up saying, screw it. You either order out, you go out for dinner, you make whatever. You just say, I'll just hop back on track tomorrow. That happens. That is life. But so often, it happens over and over and over again. And we think we're making good choices and we're trying to keep calories down and we're just not accurate with estimating, and it becomes more that we're estimating now than it is we're actually tracking accurate numbers. And so then we spin our wheels and we wonder why we're not making any progress. This is why planning ahead makes such a difference. Like, you plan tonight what you're going to do tomorrow and you don't have to think about it anymore, right? Decision fatigue is gone. You don't have to even worry about it. So that's out of the picture. The other thing that helps along with planning here is having go-to meals that you frequent, that you always have the ingredients on hand for, and that you know how to make with your eyes closed. You've already figured out the nutrition guidelines with them, and so it's all easy. Like for me, I have 3 or 4 breakfasts that I rotate around all the time. I'll just mix them up. Like, I might do the same thing for a week and then the next week I'll do something else. Or maybe for a couple days I'll do one thing and then for the other couple days I'll do another thing. But it's always a version of the same thing. Like, I don't try to recreate the meal and get creative every single time I eat. I have my go-to breakfasts that I frequent. I have about 3 lunches that I like to frequent, and dinners are tend to be the wild card in my house, but they're always a protein base with lots of vegetables and usually some rice, potatoes, something like that. It's pretty basic. You can have these elaborate recipes and figure it all out through an app. And once you do that once, it usually saves it for you. So that's good. You don't have to do it again. But the more basic you can stay and have these go-to meals, the easier your life will be. So as you're planning, keep in mind keeping some of your meals that you can frequent a lot that will make your life easier and make planning ahead even easier. And then you'll have your whole next day planned out for you. There's no anxiety. You don't have to worry about, oh my God, what am I going to eat to meet my requirements? You already know. You may still have to cook it. That's okay, but at least you don't have to sit there and think about it. when you are tired and you're hungry, and you're probably not going to make some of the best decisions while you're that tired and hungry, right? So planning, probably, and you've probably heard me say this, I feel like planning is the most underrated fat loss hack there is. And I hate that word hack because that implies we're looking for shortcuts. But this is a hack. Like, this is a basic thing that separates people from being successful and non-successful. And really, while it sounds like, well, duh, that's kind of common sense to plan, you'd be surprised at how many people don't do it. It is common sense to plan, but so many people just don't do it for a lot of different reasons. So if you make planning ahead a priority, I think your life will change. I really do. So another thing that I feel like is the difference between people who are successful and people who are not is that successful people, you know, don't beat themselves up when they go over their calories, right? They understand, they went over their calories, they understand they're not going to gain fat from going over their calories that night. And so they got off track, they just hop back on. It's not this big emotional thing, right? They don't panic. They don't say, screw it, well, I screwed up with this meal, I might as well just stay off track for the weekend, I'll hop back in on Monday. No, they don't do that. They just say, you know what, went over my calories, I'm going to hop back on track the very next meal. And that's it. They don't look back, you know? And I feel like sometimes people will take that off track meal and they feel full because they ate more than normal, and they start feeling fat. And I say this because I used to confuse these two feelings a lot. The difference between feeling full, having content in your belly, versus feeling fat. I always felt fat. I didn't realize it was legit content sitting in my stomach. I wasn't fat. I didn't gain fat from that meal, but I felt fat. And then the emotions come into play. And then all bets are off at that point, right? When we let emotions out. So successful dieters just get off track, and they just get right back on. That's it. No guilt, no shame, no nothing. They just keep going. That's it. Another thing that separates successful dieters from unsuccessful dieters is that successful dieters understand that the scale will go up. It's going to go down. It's going to stay the same. Like, they understand this. They realize that they can eat perfectly for 3 days and the scale might go up. But they don't freak out about it because they understand this is part of the game. They take the emotion out, because what's happened is over time, they've seen that spike and they've stuck with it long enough to see the whoosh, to see it go back down. They understand that the scale will go up because our bodies are holding on to water, because maybe we lifted super heavy weights the day before, or maybe we had more carbs because we went out to eat, our body is holding on to water. We had more salty foods than normal, something like that. They understand that they didn't eat enough calories in that one sitting to drive the scale to go up. They understand it's not fat that's indicated on the scale. This is really important, because if you're in my generation, you understand that when we grew up, the scale went up, that was bad. It went down, that was good. That was it. There was no explanation of fluctuations. There was no talk of that. It was either a black and white thing. Up is bad, down is good. That was it. That's not easy to get rid of, especially when you're my age and you've thought that for over 40 years. For heaven's sakes, that's a tough one. And I'll tell you, I don't like when I see the scale go up. I get that little kick in the gut every time I see it go up. But the difference now is I understand what it's about. I understand that I didn't pig out and gain fat overnight, for goodness sakes. I know that, but I still don't like it. So I guess my point is here, it's okay to feel that, right? I mean, what person on the planet likes seeing the scale go up when they're trying to lose weight? I mean, nobody does. It's okay not to like it, but it's not okay to react to it and to react in panic and think that I've done something wrong or it's not working for me and all those things that go into our head. You know, that's not okay. And this leads me to emotion. Successful dieters don't let emotion out of the trunk of that car. You know, I always talk about the fat loss car, right? And we have a driver for the fat loss car, and that's nutrition. You all know that. And the passenger of the fat loss car is training. We all know that. We love training to be the driver, but it's just not. The driver of the fat loss car is nutrition. But in the trunk of that car is emotion. And when we start letting emotion out of the trunk and into the front seat, we're screwed. Because now emotion's going to start trying to drive that car, right? And when you start allowing emotion to drive that car, meaning when you start freaking out because the scale went up and you've been perfect with your nutrition for 4 days and God, why did the scale go up? It must not be working. I must need to lower my calories even more. When you start doing that kind of stuff, then you are setting yourself up to be in the hamster wheel of frustration for many weeks and months to come because you have allowed emotion out of the trunk of that car and you're allowing it to drive. Successful dieters don't do that. Successful dieters understand that emotion belongs in the trunk. It might be okay to crack the trunk a little bit, let emotion take a breath when the scale goes up, like you don't like it, that's okay. But then you shut the trunk right back down and you tell emotion just to shut up, stay in the trunk. I understand what's going on and I keep moving on from there. That's the difference. Successful dieters do not let emotion out of the trunk of the car. That is not easy. And I don't want to sit here and pretend like it is, but it is an awareness that you have to be aware of, and you have to put your foot down and let logic take over, because our logic voices can be stronger than emotion if we push it, and we need to do more of that. The people that are successful understand that. The people that are not successful don't understand that yet. They haven't mastered that yet, and that's something to be completely aware of. So keep emotion in the trunk of your car. That's a great way to remember that. And the last thing, which I honestly think can be one of the most important differences between successful dieters and unsuccessful dieters, is just honesty. Successful dieters are honest with themselves. They call themselves out on their own bullshit when they're trying to bullshit themselves by saying, I've done everything right and blah, blah, blah. Yet there's two lattes they didn't track. They're saying that they're eating 1,200 calories, but they're not. They did for a day until they got so hungry they started to overeat and overeat and overeat. They are brutally honest with everything, and they don't put up with their own crap. This is super important because I honestly think this is a big difference between the two. Unsuccessful dieters tend to find an excuse after excuse after excuse on why things don't work. And they're not opening themselves up to look inside themselves and figure out, okay, where have I gone wrong? Like, did I really count everything? Are my weekends really on point like I'm saying they are? Things like that. I think being honest with yourself and then holding yourself accountable. You know, we all like to have somebody to hold us accountable, but whether you hire a coach or you're part of, you know, the inner circle with us or whatever, accountability has to start with you. Because if you're not going to hold yourself accountable, nobody else can. You know, it's got to start with you. And that's probably one of the biggest differences. Successful dieters call themselves out all the time. And people that don't find more excuses. And they let those excuses become justifications. Justifications for not trying anymore, or this is the justification for why this doesn't work for me and it works for that person, but just it won't work for me. We've got to be more aware and we've got to be tough on ourselves. And that's not easy to do. Man, that's not easy to do. But I really feel like it's a requirement, because if you can't be honest with yourself with all this, then I think you will spin your wheels. So those are the differences I feel like there are between people that are successful and unsuccessful. planning ahead with those go-to meals, the protein cheat sheet, not beating yourselves up. Get off track, you get back on, you just keep going. And putting emotion back in the trunk of that car, maybe opening it for a little bit of air so you can feel it because you're a human being, but then you shove it right back in the car. You do not let emotion drive your car. And then being brutally honest with yourself. Don't put up with your own crap. You know, call yourself out. When you do all these things, you will be a successful dieter. And the cool thing about this is none of these things are out of reach for anyone. You all can do these. And maybe you work on one at a time, and it's going to be like baby steps, especially for the mindset stuff and the emotion stuff. You know, that is practice, 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 practice. That is not a one and done, right? That is practice over time. Like anything else, we talk about patience. You can't say, well, I tried it once, it didn't work. No, when you're trying to shift how you think about things, that is something that takes time, and you keep working on it over and over and over again. Because the great news is you can do this. Each and every one of you can do this. So think about these, write these down. I hope this is helpful for you. I want to thank you all for being here, first of all, too. Thank you, first and foremost. So many of you have been saying, we want more podcasts. So I'm going to try to keep doing more podcasts for you. Thank you so much. If you can leave a 5-star review, certainly would appreciate that. That will get this out to more and more people. If you want to join us in the Inner Circle, we have a calorie cycling challenge getting ready to start. You'll get a free month in the Inner Circle. I'll put the info in the show notes. We would love to have you. And thank you for being here. And we will talk to you soon.